You're listening to Rochelle Hunt. Call 1-300-222-774 or text 0437 774 774.
23 minutes away from 3. Danny Valent, food writer, eater, cook, and definitely traveller, given that you have just come back from India. You can check out all of the stuff at DannyValent.com. But Danny, before we speak about your incredible travels, are you a journal keeper, a diary writer in any way?
I have been over the years, certainly in my younger years. I haven't for decades, I would say. But I did recently have cause to go up into the attic and haul down a suitcase which had a whole lot of that sort of stuff in it, old photos, letters that I'd written and that had been written to me. And it's very emotional to dig back into that stuff.
Oh, my God, it is. You have to be ready to open it because you basically say goodbye to the rest of the day.
And
you,
absolutely.
Before you know it, it's 2 a.m. in the morning and you're sitting there with a tub of ice cream and tears down your face.
Were you there? And also, you know, my kids are around and it's like, I don't want them to see this. Should they see that? Do you bring people in or keep people out? Because the past, it's like it's that foreign country, isn't it? And unlocking it is fraught with... danger's probably too strong, but definitely emotion.
And did you put
emotion.
Everything back in, or were there a couple of pieces where you thought, you know what, actually I'm going to pop that one on the mantle, or that one's going to come into my everyday circulation?
I took a couple of snaps and texted them over to friends. I was like, oh my goodness, look at us here. Look at us by Fitzroy Pool with our very hairy legs and our interesting bathers. At a certain point, I felt like I was perhaps sorting things out. But then everything had to be shoved back in like 30 seconds, bashed, like scrumple, put it back in and hide it behind a door to deal with later. So, it's
something that's sort of a metaphor for life, really, in the boxes that we keep in attics and the boxes that we keep in cupboards that we move from house to house and very rarely open.
I know. What does it say about us? And I suppose it says everything. So that's why
the skeletons in the closet. We keep them all in there.
Confronting.
Now, you've been traveling. I follow you on Instagram. And have you just been to India?
I have. I snuck off for a week. And to go to India, which is so different to here for a week, is pretty crazy. But, sometimes you can't get the 6-week trip, and I'm actually really into this idea of the 1 week blast in another city, and I love cities, so I'm happy just to go to a city, just stay there and explore it and then come home.
Was this your first time?
It was actually my second time. The last time I went was 20 years ago, and it was when I was a travel author for Lonely Planet. When I was there doing that, I was there for months and I didn't have much of a budget and I had a very difficult job to do. Lonely Planet authoring is fantastic, but it's not, there's certainly no martinis by the pool. It's a slog. So this experience was very different. And I suppose, in my first trip, I was focusing on backpacker travel, and this time I was very much focused on food. And I found it incredibly energizing. I learnt like 100 things every day and I returned extremely inspired.
And did you go trying to discover something more about street food or about fine dining? Did you have a mission in mind, or was it just, I'm going to go, I'm going to... hang out and see what happens?
I was definitely open to whatever came my way. I did have a lot of tips from people, restaurants that I should go to or areas that I should try or markets I should visit. But whenever I travel, I always have a couple of dishes that I'm researching, or perhaps it's an ingredient. I love having that focus and just trying to go really deep into something. So this time for my trip, it was things done with chickpeas. That was one focus.
It's like seriously my favourite food.
Oh, okay.
I love chickpeas.
I love them too. And there's so much you can do. And the second focus was whole grain breads, because...
Why was I not invited?
I actually did have room in my suitcase. So next time
you'll have to
come. Whole grain breads. I think in Australia we do really get locked into this idea that, bread means flour. Of course, a lot of people are also eating gluten-free, so there's that comes into it. But in India, they've never lost the idea of whole grains and lots of different grains that are in breads. So one thing I found so fascinating was that grains that we grow here in great quantities, for example, millet and sorghum, which in Australia we
sorghum.
It's sorghum. A round grain, sort of like it's a round grain the size of maybe, I don't know, like a large couscous kind of size. It swells up a little bit and it's really nutty and delicious. We feed it to animals. We also export it. So millet, we mostly feed to animals. But in India, it's used in lots of different ways.
Millet bread.
Yeah.
Here.
It, you see it a little bit, but there it's just, you know, I went to one amazing, Tali restaurant. So Tali's like a sort of tray meal with lots of different things. And there were six different whole grain breads offered as part of that. And it was, yeah, there's the millet, there's the red millet, there's the sorghum, there's the shortbread. Like it was unbelievably diverse and so exciting.
So whereabouts in India were you for this week?
I was only in Mumbai. Yeah. So, Mumbai is on the west coast. Yeah, sort of, you know, it's not far in the north and it's not quite south, but it does have a lot of southern food and a lot of, examples of northern Indian cuisine as well. Such a diverse cuisine.
1-300-222-774. If you'd like to share your food stories, whether it be of India or Mumbai, or maybe you have particular Indian cuisine dishes that you would like to share with us as well, please do. 1-300-222-774. Danny Valent is with you. Okay, let's go to chickpeas. What kind of chickpea food did you eat while you're in Mumbai?
Oh, okay. Well, one of the best street food snacks is pani puri. So pani puri is like a crisp dough ball. The top of it is pierced, so then you can fill it with things. And one of the most common fillings is potatoes and chickpeas. And then it's got chutneys on it, so little chili chutneys or chilies, like spicy sprinkles, and some yogurt. And then you have to eat it in one because the dough starts to go soggy and it might collapse.
Is it small? So you
small.
Yeah. Good, because otherwise.
So smaller than a ping pong ball. You can get it into your mouth in one. There's another sort, which is filled with water. So it's spicy water. And that is like, it's like, you know, we had a guide taking us out and having some street food and he's like, you have to put it down in one. And I had it and I was like, okay, that was the equivalent of a tequila shot or something because it's like, okay, it's all in my mouth. There's nothing to do but swallow, but I might die.
It's like a taste explosion, literally.
It was exactly a taste explosion. Yeah. So chickpeas in one version of the pani puri is amazing. But also what I loved so much is chickpea flour is used extensively. And, so one of the dishes I was researching was this chickpea flour. It's called a kahi, and I'm going to have said that really wrong. It's not a curry. It's a kahi, and it's, chickpea flour with yogurt, and you stir it and stir it and stir it and stir it with spices and it thickens up. Absolutely beautiful.
1-300-222-774. There is at a farmer's market, you know how often there's storeholders that you'll see at the same farmer's market.
Yeah.
And there is a gorgeous Australian Indian man there. He and his family make their own curry pastes. And I sort of cheat often and get his, but they're beautiful. And I said to him, there was a vindaloo that I buy from him all the time. And I was saying, you know, what should I add with it? And he always says chickpeas, just protein you want to go with. But then what I love about that is that it pads it out, and gives it a texture that's incredible, but it also, it's so cost effective because it's almost doubling the size of your meal. But chickpeas within curries or within something like a vindaloo, it's incredible.
Yeah. Well, they're so nourishing and, as you say, pretty inexpensive. And I think it's, and vegetarian. I think one of the things that's so interesting in India is that like vegetarian is the norm and then meat is the variation. So your meals are either veg or non-veg. So the non-veg, i.e. the meat is the, you know, the less usual way of eating. And every restaurant you can have a vegetarian option.
And what about in Australia? Do we have proper, like, traditional Indian food? You know, it's taken us a long time to not Australianize certain dishes. For example, you know, if you might go for a Thai feast here in Melbourne, but then you actually go to Thailand, the food can often taste quite different, but that's slowly changing. What about Indian cuisine?
Yeah, look, I think it definitely is changing here, where I think what we had, it's the same with any sort of waves of immigration. It depends where people come from. And most of our Indian immigrants in previous decades have come from the north. So the classic sort of Indian restaurant in Melbourne will have a lot of different curries and they're mostly northern style curries. And yeah, as you say, it's like people do tend to expect certain things if they go to an Indian restaurant in Melbourne. So there must be the butter chicken, you know, so those kind of classic dishes, restaurants almost feel like they have to have them on the menu. But I think we do have people coming from all different parts of India and we do see a lot more southern Indian food here now.
That's so sweeter, isn't it?
It can be, but I think the flavours that one classic thing you see around is dosas. So a flat pancake made with fermented rice flour batter. And then that can be filled with all kinds of different things. And, you know, it's like curry leaves. It's more seafood. It's those sort of lighter, brighter, citrusy flavours, a lot more coconut as well.
Why is it that, and you know, when you go for a wonderful Indian feast, which is one of my favourite things in the entire world to do, and all of the dishes come out in the gorgeous sort of little, almost like ramekins, but you know, they'll be copper and beautiful metals and whatnot. And at first you go, that's so small, I could eat three of those. And then three of you struggle to get through one. There's something incredibly filling and satisfying.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
I think a lot of it's just to do with the great depth of flavors. So beautiful spices. And I think also sometimes if it's got ghee in it, so that's the sort of clarified butter that's often used as a base fat, that can be very filling as well. And sometimes it's to do with the grains that are in that food as well.
1-300-222-774. Trudy's called in from Painesville, beautiful part of the world. Trudy, you've just returned from India.
Yes, I have. I was very lucky. I got to spend a month in India, and I didn't go down to Mumbai. We were mainly around Delhi and Rajasthan, but the food was just absolutely amazing.
And what took you there, Trudy?
Well, I went for work for the first part of it. I'm involved in education, so I was in some schools in Delhi, and then the last part of it, we just got to enjoy being a tourist.
Oh, how lucky. And so what were some of your favourite dishes?
Oh, look, I fell in love with all of the... I learned that they call them wet foods and dry foods. So all of the wet foods are the sauces and which you would use all that beautiful bread to virtually lick up off the plate. They were the kormas and the butter chickens and the Rogan Joshes. Just beautiful. I was definitely a meat or a non-veg rather than a veg, I'm afraid.
No shame in that. It's just such a diverse cuisine, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It was just beautiful. And because we're involved working with people there, they took us to some magnificent restaurants.
Insider information. That's what you want, Trudy. Yes. And now that you're back in Painesville and around that area, I mean, are you trying to cook some Indian food or are you starting to introduce more Indian food into your just eating habits?
Well, we certainly tried to. I couldn't say that we were overly successful.
It's tricky, isn't it?
It is tricky, and they're so clever with their spices and their combinations. But anyway, we can only continue to try, but I'm sure we will never emulate how magnificent the food is over there.
Oh, good on you, Trudy. Lovely to hear that. And look, it's good fun just trying and learning it. I was given an Indian cookbook from France about 20 years ago, and it's beautiful because it's actually almost like a photographic book. It's this huge, big hardcover coffee table book sort of with recipes dotted in it. And Danny Valente, when I have time, which is rare these days, but you know, when you go, you know what, let's invite some people over. I'm going to dedicate an entire day to cooking. It's great at the end of it, but it's, you know, it's a mess. It's a open up the back doors and let's just sweep this kitchen out like it's some kind of cattle station.
Like a shower of turmeric and cinnamon and all that.
Because it's not difficult in the sense that if you follow a recipe, it's just precise and a bit more time consuming if you're not used to it.
I think there's a lot of simple dishes that people make and things that you can make a simple lentil dal in, you know, 10-15 minutes. But if you don't have those ingredients to hand, then certainly, you know, if you're upending the pantry to find the cardamom seeds at the back of it, then yeah, that's
and then you're like,
the
how long have they been there? And the other thing is too, you can't ad lib if you don't know it very well. It's not like, oh, I'll just substitute or I'll just chuck in a bit of this or a bit of that, because it can go very badly.
Well, I think it's with any cuisine. It's about that confidence. And the more you do it, the better you get at improvising. I think I did find that people related so strongly to ingredients. They were very fussy. You know, people go shopping daily or even twice daily for their ingredients. And they're really judging, you know, is this ginger the same as yesterday's ginger? And then making those adjustments just because they can relate so closely to the ingredients.
Speaking of ginger, Scott sent a message saying, good afternoon. Traditional Indian food actually doesn't use ginger. They use alternatives that are better. Did you eat a lot of ginger in Mumbai?
There was some ginger. So I made a cooking video with a chef over there, and he did use some ginger in the chickpea dish that I mentioned. But I suspect that, it's a regional, there's regional variations, and I'm sure that some ingredients, you know, come to the fore in some areas and not others. It's almost crazy to call India a country. It's like, I think there's something like 500 different languages spoken and so much, variation from place to place and from season to season as well.
And is it all spicy? There's a little bit of a myth that all Indian food is spicy. spicy.
There's a few myths about Indian food. No, it doesn't always have to be spicy. No, it doesn't always have to be heavy. So you can have really, really delicate, light touch, Indian food. And yes, I think spicing looks, I went to one street market and there were people eating some spicy, a spicy sort of Chinese noodle dish, which is a subset of Indian cuisine. And they were, their eyes were streaming and they kept adding more chili.
Oh, I love that.
And it's
Steve.
Just, you know, you can just sort of almost see their temperatures rising as you look at them. So there's definitely a love of the chili in some quarters, but no, you don't, certainly don't have to blast your head off.
That makes me very happy. Susan in Collingwood saying, ladies, hello, I lived in India for 6 years. Now I'm going to no doubt mispronounce a lot of these dishes, so you can help me through this. Mongolian seafood? Mongolian, yeah?
Mangalore, possibly.
So, possibly, thank you. Seafood was her favourite.
Okay, well, I had a crab dish from Mangalore, so southern India, and oh my goodness, it was so good. And I have to say, there was a lot of ginger in that. So yeah, ginger, garlic, coriander, smothered all over this beautiful crab. Delicious.
Crab sukha, S-U-K-H-A.
Do not know that one.
No.
We'll look it up.
With Nia Dorsa, that's at Trishna in Bombay, and apparently that is to die for. That's from Susan in Collingwood. Oh, keep those coming through. 1-300-222-774. You can text as well, 0437-774-774. So that's street food. What about fine dining? Is it different in any way?
Yeah, so I think, you know, a couple of decades ago, if you went to a fine dining restaurant in one of the big cities of India, they probably would have been leaning towards France, you know, trying to get a little bit, you know, fancy, that Michelin star vibe. But I think what we're seeing now is Indian chefs who are incredibly proud of their cuisine, and they're, putting a fine dining spin on some of those Indian dishes. So, yeah, I went to one particular restaurant in Mumbai, called Mask, and the chef there, was very, very creative with ingredients that he'd foraged from the north of the country. He was fermenting things. He was, I guess, really giving that fine dining, contemporary treatment to some of these classic dishes. And it was super exciting.
Brick Lane, East London. Can't beat that for Indian and most other food, says this text as well. Jenny.
Yeah.
Hi. What's your
favorite? Hello. Good. I've just returned from a month in Germany.
Oh, lucky.
And yeah, it was great. And with every breakfast, there was a really dark, seedy, grainy bread. It was just delicious. And when I was coming home, I thought, well, this is something I'm going to miss. So, yeah.
Have you tried to find it here or make it yourself, maybe, Jenny?
I couldn't make it myself. I've only been back about 48 hours.
Oh, so, God. Well, when the jet lag kicks in, that way you've got something to do with your time at 3 a.m.
Yeah, the bread pangs. I suspect it was a dark rye or a pumpernickel. They certainly do love those dark breads in Germany. Mm, but yeah, great. I think you would be able to track something similar down here.
Pumpernickel is beautiful. Oh, love it. And what were you doing in Germany, Jenny?
It was a reverse. It was like a pilgrimage. My, maternal grandmother's grandparents were Lutheran missionaries through South Australia.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I backtracked sort of to where they'd been and where they'd come from, and
wow. And did you find what you were looking for?
I think I'll do a bit more research the next time I go back.
Oh, good on you, Jenny. Oh, gosh, lots of people are, you know, if you have the opportunity and the means to be able to do that, it's incredible, isn't it, to be able to track back your ancestry.
It's amazing, yeah. And I think, you know, as part of that food adventure, I think sometimes it can be really moving to think, oh, I'm eating the bread or the dessert or the pudding or whatever it is that my ancestors ate. I think that's a really strong and, yeah, authentic way to cement those connections.
This is an interesting text from Rosie. Ladies, I'm so confused. When travelling, I've always been told never eat street food. I think even Smart Traveller mentions this as well. So what's changed? Well, Danny is also known as Iron Guts Danny, but...
Yeah, I was lucky. I didn't get sick at all. And I think... what can you say? If you want to be super safe, sure, don't eat street food. If you want to just dive in and hope for the best, then eat street food. There were some things that I wouldn't eat. So there is a lot of fresh fruit sold on the streets, and that is sort of soaked in water, and you can see them washing the plates in the water. So I only did drink bottled or filtered water, and I chose what I ate off the street. But it's just so much a part of travel.
And you sort of suss out who else is eating there. And yeah. I don't know, have they keeled over? No, they're good to go. Okay, yeah. I'll order that. Thank you.
I also made sure I had lassi, so yogurt, and I think that can, I don't know, like disinfect your insides a little bit.
Are you just making that up?
No, definitely you should. The local probiotics are supposed to be offer some sort
of
protection.
Does settle your tummy,
doesn't it? Yeah. So I definitely would make sure I had some yogurt every day. I mean, I do that here anyway. Those fermented, you know, bacteria, they're good for us.
Goodness.
And the occasional just like chili. I don't know. I feel like it kills things that might be trying to harm me. I don't know. It's not scientific, but I was fine.
Eat chili. It kills things that are trying to harm me. That's Danny Valent's quote of the year right there. You know what? I subscribe to that as well. Now, on your website at the moment, you've got up a lovely little mint and coriander chutney. Is this a pretty simple one to bang
out? It's so simple.
Out?
It's from a local chef, Jesse Singh, and he's a really fantastic advocate for creative Indian food here in Melbourne. His city restaurant's called Daughter-in-Law. And this recipe is super easy. It's just to bung it all in the blender and whiz it up. And it's, I think chutney is such a big part of eating in India. It's like there are little condiments added to everything. And it's a really nice way into Indian food. If you just start playing with some of these flavors, you know, chuck it on your sausage or your steak or your grilled chicken, and just, you know, you're elbowing your way into Indian cuisine in a really simple way.
And you can go to DannyValent.com if you'd like to get that recipe. Coming up after the 3 o'clock news, I'm speaking to the CSIRO about their latest low carb diet recipe book. So looking at just, I guess, a lower carb diet. How do you, I mean, you're a carb lover, aren't you? Like I am.
I love carbs, and I do. I'm all about balance. So I'm not sure where my beautiful whole grain Indian breads are going to fit into this CSIRO book, but I will investigate. I think, I'm all about balance, and of course, different people need to eat in different ways. But if you can, if you can love your carbs along with your greens and all your other bits and pieces, then that's lucky.
Danny Valent, writer, food eater, traveller, cook. DannyValent.com is your website. Go to it. Find yourself a new little mint chutney. Yum, yum.
Get
Thanks, Danny.
Thanks, Rochelle.